Okay, so it's a pleasure to be here as usual and to present you this work on cuprates. So it's work in progress. It's just recording. Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell me if you don't hear me or if my French accent is too strong. Tell me to be slow. It's the only thing I can do. So it's a work which has a bunch of collaborators and the benefit of the visit of Constantine in 2012 now, it's almost 2 years we started it, in Paris. And this is two PhD students, and recently I start to work with a bunch of young guys basically I met in Brazil. So Thomas and Xavier in Natal and Van Wulto is coming from the group of Herman Freyr in Goiânia, so he's an excellent young student, he's a PhD, advertised for the future when he will apply to the US. He's really very good. The best I ever met. So, this talk will be about emergent symmetries and whether it is still something that we can consider for cuprates or not. So the symmetry I'm talking about is a SU2 symmetry, which rotates between a pairing state and this equivalent charge vector of the pairing state. And we'll see that in the model I present, it will be a quadrupolar density wave. And this will be our candidate for the pseudo-gap state of the cuprates. So the idea of emergent symmetry is like, it relies on the fact that you have two levels which are degenerate or almost degenerate. And if they are degenerate, it could be for by accident, then there is nothing to say. Or you could have an underlying symmetry relating them. And here we consider the second case where they are symmetry related. Now, of course, you will see the theory is beautiful, then the symmetry will be verified. But in real life, it will be broken in many, many type of ways, possible ways. And the idea is that if the splitting of the two energy levels by all these breaking terms is not too strong, you can recover the symmetric state with temperature. And here is a recent paper by Corbos where they met calculate the energy between a pairing sector and superconductivity and stripes, and which is charge sector. And they saw that, this is a parameter of coordination of their numerical methods. So you have to extrapolate to zero. And they see that the energy is remarkably close. So there seem to be some, at least, I interpreted some evidence, like we understand it, don't understand it very well, between a pairing sector and the charge sector. So in their calculation, they found these diagonal stripes who are a bit lower in energy, but they didn't check our quadrupolar density wave order, but it's closer to the pairing, so if it works for the stripe, I think it will work even better. The only thing I want to underline is, it seems that some simulations show that like the pairing sector and charge sectors are very close. So the idea is not new, far from it. So you have first SU2 symmetry has been advocated for cuprates for a very long time. So people have tried to rotate the superconductor to many states. Like one of the most famous is this loop flux phases. Like it was a work of Patrick Lee and Cotillard. So people noticed that you could, by particle transformation, you could rotate superconducting state to a flux phase state. And this was kind of candidate for the pseudo gap for a very long time. And the SO5 symmetry as well, where you rotate superconductivity to magnetism. And it's an emergent symmetry of the field theory. I advocate that this symmetry requires a bit more fine-tuning because the two states are present in the ordered phase. So if you want to have to be close to the symmetry, you need to be close to this point here where you are in between first-order transition and second-order transition. Okay, so I would advocate that it's very recently that people thought of rotating to a charge sector. God knows why, maybe it was too plain and too simple for cuprates. And second, it's in better position since the fully symmetric state is a candidate for the pseudo gap, but at least with doping, we are not in a situation where the two phases are present. Only with a magnetic field, we'll meet a situation where the two phases are present. And actually, we'll see that it has basically, under magnetic field, this type of phase diagram with superconductivity and charge. So the model is a model where the cuprate is described with a very, well, some people say unlikely, but we start with a model of itinerant electrons with long-range antiform magnetism. So that has been criticized a lot, but one needs to start with something. And it's also something that has been studied for years. And this model, not only it is weakly correlated at the beginning, but the eight hot spots are extracted only, and we neglect all the rest of the Fermi-Sieur phase. And the third thing we do is we linearize the dispersion around the hot spots. So if you do that, you have a very beautiful effective field theory, which is basically the advantage of it. So just, well, I think most of the audience here knows, but this theory starting from a long-range antiformatic fluctuations has been studied in the past. I think it started with the ideas of David Pines, and then Andre has been really giving a lot of progress to this field. And basically the treatment that we could get with an anomalous exponent is based on Eliasberg theory for the full Fermi surface. But here we'll see that for the eight hot spot model, we'll have a different picture which is emerging. So this work is also, there is a similar paper of Medlitsky and Sajdev. We studied this work, and what we did is a follow-up of their work. So what it is to notice that if you take the eight hot spot 4x4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the other one, first the four quartet decouple, so at the first level you can treat these four here independently of those four there. And then you will look at the interaction between this hotspot and this one, which are led by symmetry k minus k, or it's also a pial sector, so it will lead to Cooper pairing and also pials type of pairing. So this is what is represented in those diagrams, ladder that we call Cooperons and diffusions. So you start from an electron here, and it is sent by antiformatic fluctuation to an electron there, and the reciprocal there for the mirror state is starting from here and is sent there. And each rank in this ladder in d equal 2 will get a log, actually log squared. And it's in perfect symmetry. As you see, if you linearize the Fermi surface, it's in perfect symmetry. So now the theory relies on resuming a bunch of two ladders in the Cooper and the charge sector. And you see where we come. So we did it bluntly. And what we found is you have a composite non-abelian order parameter with SU2 symmetry rotating between the charge sector and the pairing sector. So that's the constraint of the SU2 symmetry. And this non-abelian parameter, which has a charge on the D-wave pairing sector, is condensing.
Sorry, can I go back and start looking at the box? So you are looking, so in this formula, there is an index for hotspots or not?
You have charge conjugation, spin sector, plus this eight hotspots which are decoupled 2x2. So all the symmetries are indexed by Pauli matrices.
In this composite order parameter. So at this point, I'm just writing it in spin and momentum channel, and then I need to figure out which hotspot pairs.
No, you don't really use this momentum. The momentum is just used to make the integral, but you are around the hotspot, and you index the hotspot by a label, like a big matrix.
There are certain pairs which will contribute to
every hotspot. Yes. There is only one other hotspot with which there is particle-particle pairing.
And another one.
So, this one and that one. This one and that one.
Yeah.
Okay. So you go from this one here to that one there, and then this one here to that one there.
Yeah, no, so I understand.
So then you label this big matrix here in the tau sector, so it's a particle whole sector, but you have this matricial form because you simplify the Fermi surface. So all reduced between commutations and anti-commutations of the matrix. So the summations here are done on just at the very vicinity of those hot spots.
Can you say what makes this exact? Why is this symmetry? So there's just two channels. Why are they related?
Okay, in short, it's a very old idea that if you neglect curvature and you calculate a Pyle's instability, completely neglect curvature, whether it's in K parallel and K perpendicular, you get blocks of the Fermi liquid both in the Cooper channel and in the charge channel. Now, if you put curvature, the curvature will cut off the log of the charge sector.
Okay.
So if you put more of the Fermi surface, and also if you, okay, there's another point, if you are not at the hotspot but away from the hotspot, to have the perfect symmetry, as we will see for the solution, you need also to be on the diagonal, on the antiferromagnetic zone boundary.
That's like in 1D, basically.
Yeah.
You get.
Yeah.
In one case, change frequency to minor frequency, another change momentum, but energy to minor. Right.
Yeah, if it's linear.
So this would be true in any kind of Fermi system with a Fermi surface if you neglect the curvature.
Curvature and then scattering transversely to the, you know, along the Fermi surface.
Yes.
This 1D analogy, is that also the reason why there are log square divergences?
No, the log square is due to the 2D antiferromagnet. You have. Yeah.
So is it because you're near the proper casting, you're near the magnetic zone?
No, it's just the antiferromagnet as D equal to. Yeah.
But if you are right, the hotspot, you get on the log.
I thought there were log squares of the quantum.
If you build deviations along the curve, if you build self energy along the curve.
Yeah.
Andre, I thought there was log squares near the corners.
No.
It's totally different direction for log square, and it's better probably not to talk about.
Okay, well, but it's due to antiferromagnetism. So if you solve the mean field equation, now you see this parameter B is a modulus of this non-abelian gap. So it has some kind of BCS type form, and F is the self-energy of the particle. But look at this gap equation. It's really exactly like BCS, except that the mediator of the interaction is the antiferromagnetic propagator, the paramagnon, and the order parameter of B is non-abelian instead of being abelian.
Can you tell me how B and F are related to the previous slide?
So F is the self-energy and B is a modulus of this beast.
Modulus of?
So U as modulus 1, so the order
parameter. Delta plus square root of delta.
So yeah, so the modulus 1 for U, and so the order parameter is B times this operator U. So it has some non-abelian phase, but apart from that, It's a gap.
So B is a spinner, like delta plus delta minus? That's
no, B is just a modulus of the gap.
Oh, okay.
And the gap has a non-abelian structure, which is described here. Which factorizes out on the
side. But it has an index, plus and minus. B has an index.
It's a linear.
Okay. The matrix equation.
Here is only the modulus shows up, and here it should be B, sorry. There's a typo. Oof. So you could put a matrix structure as if it was an abelian phase on both sides, and here you get the modulus.
No, but what I mean is D a matrix that relates?
No, D is a propagator. Here the equation is written without matrix structure. If you want to put the matrix structure, you'll get it in B, and there is a B here, sorry. It's like a BCS gap.
But B has two components, delta plus delta minus.
Yeah, the is present in terms of B alpha. What they have in the denominator is mod B squared.
Right, but in the numerator, it's
B alpha expressed in terms of
okay,
B alpha.
Good.
It's a matrix.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So it's a matrix equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
D is not a matrix.
B is a matrix.
It's diagonal matrix.
It's one matrix. Come on. So here is a modulus of this parameter. Since you have this SU2 symmetry at this point, it doesn't matter, it's factorizing. When you break it, then you will have to change this equation if you break the symmetry. So what's important now, if you look, so here it's the variation also of B around the hotspot. So it has this D wave asymmetry, which is dictated by the pairing. And it's not small. It's like if J equals 1, we find 0.5, 0.6. It's quite big. It's mean field. So here's a theory. Now the curvature breaks, or you have all the terms which breaks this SU2 symmetry. So then the degeneracy is split between the charge sector and the pairing sector, with the pairing sector being lower in energy. So you have an energy scale which is proportional to the symmetry breaker, below which you will condensate into the lowest energy state, which is the pairing. And if this breaking is not too big, then when you increase temperature, then thermal effect will make you able to rotate again from one phase to another one, from one state to another one. Of course, if curvature of or these terms breaking SU2 symmetry are too big, then this energy scale will be of the order of T star, then it's over. You don't have the state. So that's the theory, and you notice that within this very simplified theory and including only curvature, you can have only this type of phase diagram. Actually, we got ideas now how to go further from that. But this is kind of the skeleton theory. So what I mean by only this phase diagram is like there is a T star and the spare conductivity is below. So we have an idea too, because it's not really the typical thing. It's only one compound which shows it.
But outside the green dome,
yeah,
it's just your SU2 field is completely disordered.
Yeah.
I mean, it might have some short range order, but
yes.
It's just disordered.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So Christian, just to clarify, so what are the components of the SU2 or the parentheses that this delta plus and delta minus that you mentioned?
Yes.
And what is the index plus and minus correspond to?
Oh, well, if it's just we could put A or B or charge.
No, I understand, but
so plus is a pairing and minus is a charge in our notation. So we could have A and B. It's just pairing and pairs and superconductivity.
Okay, but again, what's the physics of this crossover region about?
So the physics we describe by nonlinear sigma model in D equal 2. I will show in the next slide.
No, I understand, but what happens?
So
what
you
distinguishes the pseudogap phase, the pseudogap regime, from what defines T star? In your model.
You have a very short range order in this charge sector.
And above?
And above, you don't have the short range order in this charge sector.
So is T star where the correlation lies is like lattice transfers? Some microscopic?
Well, okay, it's a crossover. Like, it's always the same story that you have this mean field thing and then you disorder.
So you disorder by the...
Okay, let's put it this way. If you put a magnetic field, for example, you will stabilize this other component, the charge order.
Mm-hmm.
So then you will see the temperature at which the stabilization has a true phase transition. Here it will be a crossover where you have a precursor with short-range fluctuations between charge and the pairing. And and again, theoretically, to describe this phase, even starting from the symmetry with a nonlinear sigma model, is something that in this phase is a disordered phase.
Right. So
in
nonlinear sigma model, all you do is you get a disordered phase.
Yes.
With a finite correlation on it.
Yes.
So within that description, you're not going to get a T star unless you define T stars when that correlation length hits some value smaller than some value.
I think that's what he's doing.
That's where you're going?
Well, okay, suppose that, you have a value that's... The definition is that it's enough to gap the Fermi surface. Will it be good for you? So, I claim that short-range order of that type can gap out the Fermi surface. Does it qualify as a pseudo gap?
But how can it do that?
Correlation
length
of one
lattice
constant,
so
it isn't going to gap out.
Well, okay, it just has a certain value, that's for sure.
But does that actually get at plugging your superconducting dome or shoulder?
The superconducting dome, okay, in D equal 2, you will have a costality.
On the overdome side, where, you have a known line, is that what you're looking at?
So in this theory, it's difficult to have the pseudo gap going down. But we have ideas to have other type of phase diagrams, actually. But in this theory, where you have simplified the Fermi surface with four hotspots, you don't have the line going down.
Kathleen, one way of asking Kathleen's question is whether the blue line and the superconducting, the TC, have to terminate at the same point.
In this theory, yes. But it's a very simplified theory, and I think if you put some, for example, if you linearize two hot regions or to the whole film, then you get in a better shape actually to define everything, T star and there are ways.
And the zero temperature limit, the T star line terminates at a sharp phase transition?
Or? Here it's not a T star line, it's a superconducting line.
So there's only one, the point is that at zero temperature there's only one transition.
Yeah.
There are two transitions. I mean, you look at charge order at interference of curvature and you find a correlation like there with
so they merge here.
Yeah.
So here.
Yeah, because superconducting is all the time.
So in this theory, they do coincide on the side of the phase diagram.
Charge order disappears at a particular.
But no. What I mean, the T star and TC, but it just means that charge order disappears.
That's if you break SU2, you're saying.
Yes.
So below certain temperature here, as it was
broken. Within the equations which you have written down, which has the symmetry, does the you draw a large T star line that seems to terminate at zero temperature limit?
No, well, okay, within this theory, well, you have to put curvature. You have to do a better job in order to.
It does not pass
in. So the theory, there will be no superconducting region at all. Right, if you keep SU2 symmetry.
No, if I keep SU2 symmetry, if you put curvature in a theory, then you break SU2 symmetry and then you lose the charge order. Now, the study with doping, if you don't think of doping but simply the vicinity of an antiferromagnetic QCP, you will have a superconducting dome finishing at some point.
We are just asking if you look at the equations that you wrote, which are SU2 symmetric, then I guess there will be only T star line and nothing else.
Yes, if there are, that was the question. If you look at the equations, it's a preemptive order of the antiferromagnetic QCP. So it will be a dome terminating at some point away from QCP due to the antiferromagnetic mass. Now, if you break the symmetry, part of this dome becomes superconducting. It's the simplest version of the theory.
But where the standard there was a putative quantum critical point of antiferromagnetic.
Yes.
And that is replaced by.
Yeah, you have this.
That's avoided or something.
Yeah, at the mean field you have this order, mm-hmm. and then you have fluctuations, which disorder this mean field.
Thank you.
Very short question. Did I hear you correctly that you said that you put a magnetic field to start it as a real phase transition?
I will talk if you leave me. We studied that. So that's a nonlinear sigma model description. Actually, there is also a typo there, but I don't know whether it's a field theorist. If not, I will not tell what it is. So you have this fluctuation, so it's in D equal 2, so you have only thermal effects, so you have the fluctuation of non-Abelian parameter, and this is a curvature term which is acting as a mass. So you see you have one energy scale. If temperature is below this energy scale, then you get into the ordered phase, and when you are above this energy scale, you get into the disordered phase of nonlinear sigma model. So this same type of nonlinear sigma model was used also in a study by Othorn and Sajdev in 2013 to explain why the charge order would be peaking at the superconductivity here. So I want to make clear that in our case, it's more the candidate for the pseudo gap, and I didn't touch the charge order yet. So here is our study with a magnetic field. We want to reproduce the experiment here of Leboeuf. Where above 17 Tesla, you stabilize the static charge order, you have a phase of coexistence, and below you have this vortex liquid and the superconductor. So it's a magnetic field versus temperature, and it's a sound experiment, so you see very sharp lines. So we just rederive nonlinear sigma model in the presence of a magnetic field, which will now favor the other side, the charge sector, and sure enough, above a certain magnetic field, you stabilize the charge sector. So here the transition is pretty sharp. It's because we are in 2D, I suppose. In 3D, you will have a coexistence of the two orders. So it's one of the cases when I saw that SO5 had the two phases, superconductivity and antiferromagnetism. Here is one of the phase diagrams from the magnetic field where the two phases are stabilized. With doping, it's more. Well, I don't know whether all the theory can address this thing. We're not too unhappy, especially because I think a 3D or weekly 3D treatment would be better. Although it's not really perfect here. We'll find something like this instead of.
You said ultrasound measurements? Or
yeah.
It's like, but if a B, I should have a phase transition, then heat capacity should just tell me what it is. So how much entropy? I guess my question is how much entropy is going into this density wave? Should one see it in the heat capacity measurement easily or not?
I don't know.
Okay.
We didn't. I think within this treatment, it's more like a spin. Like more first order, like it's a bit of a flop. Here it goes from one phase to another. But again, I suppose it's because it's 2D. If it's 3D, you will have a coexistent phase and something better. So, sorry, did I? Maybe I should have had that before. So, yeah, in theory. So, I want to make it clear that all this started because we wanted to study the charge order and the cuprates, but we end up with a theory for the pseudo gap that we believe that we want to push. Maybe it's not the right one, or maybe it's the right one, I don't know. But the charge order, we noticed that from the beginning that our theory was predicting a wave vector which was on a diagonal. So if you took the symmetry here, our wave vector was on diagonal, and it's never seen on a diagonal. It's always been seen parallel to Qx, Qy. So the charge order, so here you can see, and it's not only at the zone edge, it seems to be depending on the compound. So here is a mercury compound, and you see that it's far away from the zone edge. So, and on the magnetic field, we seem to have a dome of this field-induced charge order, although this dome is inferred from the magnetic field studies. At least there's one point of NMR which is with no magnetic field, but those points here of this NMR paper are under magnetic field, and these are sound experiments, I believe. So, I come back, I want to present these atoms for the charge order of various groups, and then to tell you what we did. One important thing is known from quite a long time, but I think it's the first paper of Weiser, is that it's not dispersing at all. It's incommensurate, and it doesn't disperse with energy or temperature. So recent attempts by Atkinson, Kemp, and Sachdev, they consider that pseudo gap is already preformed one way or another. Here's short-range antiferromagnetic fluctuations. Or here, I don't know, it's some kind of spin liquid. And then on top of that, if you do some very weak coupling, you find that you have a nesting at the end of the pockets. So you can stabilize with the right wave vector some charge order at the tip of the arc. Within the weak coupling theory, it's difficult to have non-dispersing because the tips of the arc will change with temperature. So the atom by Andre doesn't have this problem. So it has a candidate for the pseudo gap, which breaks the tensorial symmetry, and which is a bound state of this charge order. Tell me if I say wrongly. And at lower temperature, you recover this charge order.
So what's on the x-axis in that box on the con? The Q star, the function. That's temperature or doping?
It is doping. It's a variation with doping of this. As function of experiment. No, they didn't put temperature, last of thing, because it doesn't work. With temperature, you should find that it doesn't move, and the tip of the arc will change tremendously with temperature. So they put the inference probably.
That's what this is?
For 4 Kelvin, the variation with at 4 Kelvin for me. Yeah.
That's what this part is MEU, that temperature?
No, it's energy, it's STM
okay.
On the monolayer BISCO. And these two actually, probably. It's also probably, although I don't remember from their paper, it's probably on monolayer BISCO at 4 Kelvin and with doping. So they have one temperature, but several energies. So this, at least they have to do something so it doesn't disperse. So what we did in a recent work is to reconsider the hotspot spin Feynman model and ask whether we could stabilize the charge order with a right wave vector. So in this theory, we had an elephant, which was our composite non-Abelian order parameter, which was showing around 120 QCP, and this pure charge order, which I called a mouse. So we generalized the theory to study them together. And there is a third possibility, which is coexistence of the two. So it's what we found. So we found several things. First, we could never stabilize within a regime of parameter of the charge order alone. But so we could not get rid of the elephant. So we stabilized first our candidate for the pseudo gap, which is a non-Abelian order parameter. But and if we don't do anything, we cannot even stabilize anything below T star. But when we look below T star, and if we add a little bit of perturbation, which would favor this type of order, like a little bit of nematicity, then you can stabilize it at lower temperature. So that would be my view, that this charge order is not a pseudo gap, but it's a kind of a subsidiary order that shows on top of a pseudo gap.
You know, you have this composite C2 order parameter, superconductivity and a charge order. So that charge order, how is it different than the, what you call it CW?
Yes, they didn't have the right wave, the same wave vector. So the one which is observed experimentally has a Q parallel to X and Y axis.
Okay.
It can be checkerboard or have a bit of nematicity, but it has a Q parallel right axis. Now the one we had has an intrinsic D wave symmetry, so it's quadruple order parameter. And the wave vector is a parallel to the diagonal, the two diagonals.
That choice was dictated by nesting that you see?
No, by the C2 symmetry and the wave symmetry. So if you want to construct to rotate your using this eight hotspot theory, if you want to rotate your superconducting order parameter to the charge sector, you will get this quadrupolar type of order. Andre,
can I do one thing? For diagonal orders that have been considered, D wave form factor is there by symmetry. It's only
yes.
D wave. For charge order with vertical or horizontal momentum, it's predominantly D wave. But by symmetry, S wave component is also allowed.
Mm-hmm.
So he made a point in his talk at the conference that it's very much D wave. And it's numerically very much D wave, but it's not D wave by symmetry.
So they are very different. So one is quadrupolar, so the first momentum vanishes. You would see it only on the oxygen. It's purely D-wave.
It's because it's not
all of purely D-wave.
Yes, no, it's completely purely D-wave. It's seen only on the oxygen, so it's a bond order. It's a pure D-wave bond order. So if you look at the result charge on copper, you find zero. Now, this one, the one seen experimentally, it doesn't have the same wave vector, which is number one problem. I mean, and they have X-rays. I don't show, actually. I don't know why in this talk I didn't. Okay, let me show you. I think I have a... So that's my conclusion, and let me show you then a bit of more experimental. So my conclusion is within this model, I couldn't get rid of the elephant, and with a small perturbation, the charge order could be stabilized. It's a small order. It's a small thing, and this thing. And some argue that it's stable only under a magnetic field. But the theory would predict something for T star, which is not the same temperature at all as a charge density wave. So yeah, that's experimental transparency that even CDIS gave me that I like because it has a lot. And well, so you have X-rays, a bunch of X-ray studies we show with no doubt that also STM, so that before that you don't see anything so far on the diagonal. anything at all. Nothing was seen. Maybe it's in some drawers of some experimentalist, but so far it's not published. It's not public, actually. But nothing was seen on the diagonal, the order. It's not even here. It is parallel to x and y axis. It relates points which are further away from the antinode. Well, in the monolinear compound, you can really make the difference because the antinode is very small and away from the antinode is bigger. Now, as you see, the phase diagram is a bit complex here, but I think it comes to a consensus among experimentalists and theoreticians as well, as I think that the T-star line, where you would characterize it by first the NMR and a specific hit show a drop, and as well as a equal zero thing that this neutron guys in Paris saw, the loop currents, this is something at T-star, is not the same as a charge line. So, and this one seems to be robust to many things, to disorder. For example, if you talk to Henri Alloul, he will tell you that if you put zinc, T-star doesn't move, but the charge order is strongly affected, this line is strongly affected, and it's compound dependent. So it could be closer to the T-star, or it'd be lower to T-star. So they still debated whether the Kerr effect shows up at T-charge density wave or at T-star, or a bit lower. So you could say they are crossover lines, that's all, as well. So that's the complexity that is emerging from this series of compounds here. So I know the theory I presented you today is something we derived 2 years ago with a little bit of progress on the charge sector that we succeed to stabilize below the T-star line with the right wave vector. But it suffers from quite a lot of questions which are unsolved. So the experts in the room can ask them, I could also tell you some of the worries that if you want to show that such a theory is here, such a symmetry exists in the system, you have to push a bit further. So it's in the wide class of these emergent symmetries, like was SO5 or SU2 before. And that's why I find it interesting, because you have a strong theoretical, at least a footprint on which you can rely, where the symmetry is verified, which I think SO5 didn't have.
You're right.
Yeah, you said SO5 had this theoretical treatment, but I think the magnetism was localized and the spermittivity was not. Here, at least you have one model. It is what it is, for which it is controlled. So whether this model is very far from the real compound or whether it is there, I don't know. So with this, I think I will thank you for your attention. I have some conclusions.
Just trying to summarize for myself. So you motivated the SU2 symmetry by saying that Couperon and diffusion have the same divergences order by order, and therefore can be linearly combined.
In this model, yes.
But this is the diffusion with the D-wave form factor that you're calculating. That's what I'm trying to understand from the.
Yes, sure, sure.
This is
sure,
not
sure,
the
sure.
usual one. Okay.
So that.
Quadrupolar.
So it's a quadrupolar D-wave. It's a D-wave. It's a D-wave. And it's not diffusion or Couperon, it's D-wave Pyle's order.
Yeah, okay, fine, thank you.
Or bond order, I don't know how people call it. Like, you have at least three names. Andre?
Yeah,
D-wave charge order.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
If you can go back to your theoretical example, the transitions. At one point you showed the phase diagram, the dashed lines of charge order. Yeah, this. Should we expect few transitions at zero temperature apart from the end of superconductivity? The one with TM goes to zero and the one with when your bond order goes to zero.
Or whether they merge into
no,
one.
I'm just asking.
Well, the study of underdoping is underway. So, I suppose.
If you include curvature.
If I include curvature.
Your bond order at some point also vanishes. this is indicated in superconducting and blue line.
No, sure, sure. If I put curvature.
Yeah, so there should be another point at zero temperature.
Although you lose the charge order here, this one can survive. So within this theory, basically, you have only this one, which can survive on top of it. Because here, you lose completely the quadrupolar. In the superconductor, you have only the superconductor, at least in 2D. So it's also a drawback we had from the beginning. First, we didn't have the right wave vector, and second, we had no coexistence in D equal 2.
Why there's no coexistence
in D equal 3, you could have.
No,
at zero temperature. I mean, when you are below the ordering transition, you lose completely the charge sector. No, it's in fluctuation. You really are in the ordered phase in superconductivity, and you lose the charge sector. So the only diagram where you had both the charge and superconducting sectors was magnetic field. Here, with temperature, is only temperature restores the charge sector. So.
Yes. Just a clarification. T star you've drawn intersecting with the antiferromagnet, yet many people draw it going way above the antiferromagnetic phase condition, and of course where you put it affects what you think happens below it. So could you clarify that point? Do you think T star intersects the antiferromagnetic line, or do you think it goes above? And what's the difference between
Is like when you reach this the regime, you will have to take care of the mod transition and localization.
But many people draw it as extrapolating above the
antiferromagnetic. No, okay, within this theory.
No, I'm talking about the experiment.
Oh, experimentally.
Yes. If T star does go above the antiferromagnetic line, does that invalidate this theory?
Well, I think this theory is invalid very close to the Mach transition, I would say. Would you say something better?
No, I'm afraid of the Catherine. I think that it's two-dimensional picture. So technically speaking, there is nothing defined at that point. There's no antiferromagnetic globally short. If you go to quasi-two-dimensional system, you know, the scale for antiferromagnetism is J. The scale for actual male temperature is J.
But is it important to this theory that the T star line intersects with the antiferromagnet?
Which is freehand drawn cartoon.
No, well, okay, if you.
If it's on the left side, that.
It doesn't matter, you're saying.
Yeah.
Within the mean field, you will have it intersecting that for sure in D equal 2.
Okay, thank you.
Now, whether it's invalidating the theory, I don't think so.
Okay.
It seems like the question, I know that you recognize your hand, but just follow up on what you're saying. Suppose it's about the question of who's the drive, who's the parent, and who's the descendant. So in the procedure here, you assume that there's an antiferromagnetic on the critical point to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's.
So therefore, the T star line. Has to be something
weak and have the antiferromagnetic. So we just got it linked that we at the mean field we got a factor of 1/2, but within this you had to have to add fluctuations or to put to do a better treatment of the fluctuating system or to put an extra dimension.
Is the D wave form factor essential to you? Because I'm wondering about Hawthorne's data. On LBCO, where they seem to find more S prime-like structure
for the charge.
Uh-huh.
So again, for the quadrupolar component on the pseudo gap, which has still not been observed at all, this is kind of protected by the symmetry. So it will be the pure D wave. We cannot do anything about it. Now for this, many games can be played. You can put a bit of nematicity. It could be a bit more S wave, a bit more D wave, a bit more S prime wave, mm-hmm. S prime or D.
So
this is very much more compound dependent, and you have more latitude to adjust and to see how it reacts to disorder or external perturbation.
I see, but if they see slightly above this in the pseudo gap, an indication of the S prime fluctuations, that would be different than your theory?
Yes, this theory you will have, but one thing that there was a strong criticism is like we start with long-range antiferromagnetism, And for sure, the antiferromagnetic magnetic correlation length is very short range in these compounds. It's a few lattice size. So at the moment, we are trying to think of a theory of hot regions instead of hot spots. So if you have hot regions, this phase diagram is changing a little bit. And you keep the D-wave character, but the charge sector, this quadrupole, is also changing form, actually, a little bit. So, but the D-wave character, yes, will be. Like, it's put it, if this is something on the diagonal, which is S-wave, I think they cannot, but I think it will be impossible. But if you would see something on the diagonal, which is pure S-wave, this will invalidate it, for sure.
Well, Hawthorne's data would suggest that there are this sort of lanthanum compounds that differ in the structure of the charge density.
So I'm not so sure this applies to lanthanum, actually.
This is specific then, too.
Well, this lanthanum, it is not really generic to me. Sorry, maybe I shouldn't say that, but I believe the stripe theory is probably more valid for lanthanum than for maybe disorder, I don't know. But it seemed to me that this classification, lanthanum, I didn't think a lot about them, sorry. But really from far away, it seems that the stripe and disorder of stripe will.
Yeah, two papers for me. So the starting point, you say you only choose the hot spot of the fermi surface, and there's no curvature and all that.
Yeah.
So that's part of this non-linear signal model. So what did you do to get the other one vector for this low temperature?
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, you just, well, first we checked all the others together, and then we couldn't stabilize it. So you have to add a small perturbation. What we do specifically is to add a little bit of nematicity.
So nothing less down to the Fermi surface.
No.
Beyond the hot spots.
No. We still stick with this model. So the work with beyond the hot spot. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand this SU2 symmetry is verified only at the hot spot.
Right.
So if you generalize to a hot region, you will have only. Then it's a way how you get rid from this beautiful footprint. You get away from it. So you will have terms breaking SU2 symmetry and away from the hotspot, so in a bit
so
of a non-local way.
Is the electric term, is that like some irrelevant terms in the signal model?
So we.
But why do you pick that one to add, except that you want?
You could probably pick something else. It's the first one we took.
A lot of irrelevant.
Sure, but this one, first of all, it seems that it's not unreasonable to have a little bit of breaking of orthorhombicity. And also, you see, this will definitely favor the ordering on X and Y because they are more independent in this charge density wave than the pure D wave, where you really have to. It's exactly the same on all the on the X and Y direction. A lot of other operators could do it. And it's just the first one that I could think of. And it was working very well, but I'm sure if you put anything which favors a little bit this parallel order compared to the pure D wave, it will do it.
Last question.
I guess I just don't quite understand why these hotspots. So they somehow build on the Fermi surface that's there if you have a diamagnetic order in there.
Yes, long range, yeah.
Right, so should I think of all the phases you're predicting are, since they emerge from this model of hotspots, are coexisting with interferomagnetism?
No, they emerge on the right-hand side, and on the paramagnetic side. So the hotspots are
the paramagnetic side, you don't have...
You have paramagnons, so you have magnetic modes which are critical. And at t equals zero, you scatter electrons through a critical mode at q equals zero, which has finite momentum. So you see that you have only a few points in the Fermi surface on which you can scatter. So you scatter your electron onto a critical mode at finite momentum.
So you don't need antiferromagnetic order to define your hotspot?
You need a critical antiferromagnetic mode. Which means that you are close to a long range order. Yeah, not short range, but long range. So if you have a mass, if it's short range, then it will extend to regions around the hotspot.
Okay.
if the modes are massive.
I think maybe another way of asking those questions, do you imagine that you start your theory close to the verge of this paramagnon condensing, and then you find that other composite operators begin to diverge faster than you approach the critical point? Is that maybe one way of thinking of it? So
yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's technically the study in the sense of a stability of the quantum critical point in its purest possible realization, where you linearize only around the hotspot, so you have a field theory for it. And it's found to be unstable, at least to this type of order, but you could have also other instabilities. For example, André is suggesting another one, which breaks time reversal symmetry. It's not that in D equal to, it's not really clear it's survived in D equal 3, but in D equal 2, these fixed points are unstable. Ferromagnetic one is also unstable in D equal 3, but and God knows whether it can be stable at all as a QCP. No, quantum critical point. At zero temperature, to have a phase transition of antiferromagnetic type without a preemptive order, it seems to be impossible in D equal 2.
All right, I think I'd like to keep the discussion going, but we should stop here. Thank you.